G'day, folks. Talk to Eric LeGrand, a New Jersey native and quadriplegic entrepreneur. And where we talk about his accident, traumatic period, where it all happened on the American football field, playing for Rutgers University, Division I football, and what he's done post-injury. The accolades, ESPY Awards, symbolic drafting to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and more. And where he's at now, embarking on new ventures into the coffee scene, doesn't stop. He's solid. And if you like the podcast, hit that subscribe button. Be much appreciated. And we've got a Patreon page, so if you want to become a part of the squad and help support the channel, hit the link. It'd be great. I want to thank our sponsors, Permobil Australia, the greatest electric wheelchairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four wheels right here, and they've got great assistive tech also. So righto, let's get into it.
Keep rolling with Jake Briggs.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Eric, how are you, brother?
I'm doing well, Jake. How are you?
Mate, I'm marvelous. Just want to say really appreciate it. Jumping on the Keep Rolling podcast and just having a yarn about, you know, yourself and what you've gone through with life and, you know, how you impressed me a lot, my friend. Like, just, you know, young entrepreneur having a crack. And I just wanted to let you know too that, yeah, like, you know, I'm a quadriplegic too, and like, Our injuries are only 10 months apart, 10 months and nearly to the day.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
When was yours?
So mine was January 2010.
Okay.
Yeah, on the 17th.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, I was October 16th, 2010. So, yep. Wow.
Yeah. You don't muck around, mate. You know?
Yeah, and I'm trying my best to, you know, make the best of my situation and not let this injury hold me back from doing, you know, some amazing things in this world. I know a lot of physical things have been taken away from us, but we can still make a difference each day.
That's it. Like, you're putting it right there, brother. It doesn't matter on your limitations. It's like your ability within your disability, and that's whether you got a disability or not. If you're still showing what you've got, which you do tenfold, like you're still having a go, which is great, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, this happened to me. I was 20 years old. I was, you know, living my dream, but I said, I don't want to live a long, miserable, always upset life. And, you know, God willing, I live for many, many more years. You know, I want to make the best out of my time here.
That's it. So tell us a bit about your life, because I can see in the background there, like with your jersey, and it seems like a lot of your life has revolved around American football. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Since I was 5 years old, actually. It's crazy. We used to play this game called Kill the Man with the Ball. I said, Kill the Man with the Ball was one guy gets the ball, and there's however many people are playing at the time, you have to try to get past all of them and score, and then you count how many times you score, or you get tackled, and when you get tackled, you throw the ball up, and the person who picks it up, they have a crack at it next. But then from there, started playing flag football to getting all the way through Papa Warner to high school. You know, was, you know, blessed enough to receive Division I scholarships and got a full ride to go play at Division I college here in my home state of New Jersey, and went to Rutgers University, and that's where it all happened.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's pretty impressive, like, with Rutgers University. And how'd it feel just being able to play in, like, growing up, loving football, and being able to play in your home state?
Oh, it was awesome, you know, being able to be in this area where I grew up. You know, there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of good football players in this state, New Jersey. We are a very small state with a lot of people. Small, like we're not by square, you know, square miles and stuff. We're not a huge state, but we got a lot of people, 9 million people that live in our state. And there's a lot of talent, and being able to play here in New Jersey and be able to, at the time, you know, Rutgers wasn't really, well, before I got there, there was a lot of down years. But when I started to get recruited there was the years that they really started to turn it on. And I wanted to be a part of that and represent here in my home state and be a part of the first to do it. The first ones, not go somewhere else in the country and be just, yeah, you know, another mark on a greatness. Now I wanted to be the first ones to try to do it here at Rutgers.
That's great. And what drew you to that particular university? Was it the style of play or coaching staff or anything like that? Or
definitely the coaching staff, Coach Greg Schiano, who was my head coach, you know, just the way that he talks to you. He looks literally, even when he's looking at you, it's eye contact, you know, very serious. And he takes 18-year-old boys and turns them into 21, 22-year-old men. And being able to develop that relationship with him, he put us through some tough times. It wasn't always easy and it wasn't always fun, but it was setting us up for life outside of football, the real world. And if, you know, if we had the God-given talents to make it to the NFL, he prepared us for that as well.
Yeah. And mate, you had the talent slot and to jump in as a defensive tackle. So, which is, that's a pretty prominent spot within, like on the field and within the roster. Yeah. And how did it feel playing that role?
Well, it was actually crazy because I was actually recruited to play another position. And I was not the size that I needed to be when I got put into that role. Usually the guys that get into that defensive tackle role, you know, between 280 and 315 pounds, I was 230 pounds and I got thrown in there. And let's just say my first few weeks of practice were not fun. I was getting thrown around, but, you know, it was a whole learning experience trying to fight for my own down there, fend for my own. But, you know, I learned and started grasping the position and realized, you know, my coach was looking at the future, not just right now. And I grew into that position and played it.
Yeah. And that's saying who you are as a person. Like, you just saying that to me now, brother. Like, it doesn't matter on, you know, on your size, like some of these other guys weigh X amount of pounds, but you're, you know, on there holding your own. And so, you know, because I talk to various people with disabilities or not, where they go through trauma in their life and what it means to them. But like, what did it feel like on the 25-yard line on that day in MetLife Stadium on that particular day when it all happened? Like, what did it feel like? Can you walk us through those steps, brother?
Yeah, it was, felt like my life was over. We had just tied the game up 17-17 in the fourth quarter, 5 minutes left. I'm running down on a kickoff to make a tackle like I've done hundreds of times before. And I remember getting through the two guys that were blocking me. And I said, this is going to be a big collision. Let me use my shoulder and keep my head out of this tackle because I know it's going to be a big tackle. My teammate gets down there a little bit before I did. About a half a second, he dove at the guy's legs. Malcolm Brown got tripped up and his body twirled in the air. And as I put my head down, thinking it wasn't going to be a tackle at all, crown of my head goes right into the back of his shoulder blades. And next thing you know, I'm laying on the ground. Last thing I feel is my legs hit the ground, that my heels hit after I went stiff. Can't move, can't breathe. And my training staff is in my face talking to me and my head coach is telling me I have to pray. Scariest moment of my life.
Yeah, that's pretty scary. But the thing is, it seems like, you know, straight away you had a lot of support in and around you while you were going through that period. And what was going through your head, like once you would have been on the stretcher and you know, you couldn't breathe, you're going through all sorts of pain and then you can't feel certain things because obviously to do with the spinal cord injury. So what was there a certain mantra or something that was going through your head or scared or what was going on, brother?
I was terrified. I was getting carted off the field. I thought I knocked the wind out of myself and I would be okay. And I thought I had a full body stinger that everything will come back. And I went to give a thumbs up to the crowd and it just felt like there was 1,000-pound cinder block laying on my hand and getting to the ambulance. I'm thinking once they put the oxygen mask on me, because I was ignorant to the fact of what an oxygen mask actually does for you. I'm thinking once they put it on, I'm going to be able to inhale and exhale it like I wanted to. They put it on, I went to inhale it. And I wasn't able to exhale. And I blacked out.
Yep. And so then that's when, obviously, that's when they would have started hooking up ventilators and oxygen machines and just helping getting the lung capacity back. It would have been along the lines of that, was it? Or
yeah, well, it was rushing me to the hospital from there and, you know, get me into the hospital and going through all the, obviously, you know, put me on oxygen, but going through the MRIs and CAT scans and seeing what the damage was that I had done and immediately planning for emergency surgery, right?
Yep. Okay, and then you've gone through that. And that's a scary period, brother. Like, I've gone, you know, through similar circumstances, but different. But it seems like, so it was a pretty good hospital system that you're in too, yeah?
Yeah. I was taken to the, you know, the best hospital possible that was in that area. So, yeah, there was Hackensack Medical here in New Jersey, and they were a trauma one unit, so they were prepared for me. You know, I'm a primary arrival and whatnot.
Yeah. And going through your rehabilitation process. And what I am really, really impressed with is just your willingness to breathe, keep, you know, get the lungs pumping, get moving. Like, you don't hear that often at all, brother. Like, you're on a ventilated quadriplegic. This is from what I've read, right? So you told you're a ventilated quad. Is that correct? You're getting told that by the medical staff?
They told me I'll be on a ventilator for the rest of my life. And, you know, through the grace of God, you know, I was off of that ventilator within 6 to 8 weeks. So it was pretty incredible. But, yeah, that was a tough time period, being that ventilator. You know, still have the scar right here. It was not fun at all.
No. And that's pretty scary. You know, I've been on one temporarily and come off, but just knowing what it's like to keep breathing. But you've been told you've been on that for life, and then you've just gone, nah, I'm off it, you know. And then
I was going to say, I was fighting whatever I needed to do. Just I couldn't sleep with it. The noise, the sound, the uncomfortableness of it wrapped around my neck. It was just horrible. So asked the respiratory therapist if she would take me off one night, and she did tell me I would last 1 minute, and an hour and a half later I was still breathing on my own. And after that, they started to wean me off of it, you know, for the next few weeks until I didn't need it anymore.
Jeez. You know, that's being stubborn, but that's being stubborn in a good way.
Absolutely. The stubbornness that I've always had with it came out for the good in that situation, that's for sure.
Yeah. And so you going through the rehabilitation process, and what I want to touch on is that jersey behind you, the team that you're representing. So you've gone through you've gone through, you know, obviously scary dark times, and you've gone, no, righto, I'm off the ventilator, breathing again, steps are moving forward. And, you know, as a quadriplegic, but what did it feel like? Like, you've gone through that process and wheeling out on the field with the Rutgers again for the first time post-injury. What did that feel like? Just getting out on the field with your brothers, getting out with the coaching staff, all of the whole organization and university.
It was awesome. 2011, October 29th, it was. Got to go out there. It was a snowstorm, blizzard. I remember everyone's like, "E, are you gonna still do this?" And I was like, "All the adversity I've been through over the past year, I promised the team I was coming out versus West Virginia. Got to keep my word to it." And it was freezing cold. And as you know, as a quadriplegic, we have a hard time regulating our temperature and whatnot. So that was a tough one for me. But I said I was gonna do it. I remember I got in the adrenaline as soon as I got in the tunnel, and I heard my teammates coming down the tunnel to meet up with me. My adrenaline just started flowing. And then we rolled out to the field. And I remember Coach Shiano brought it up and said, "Lord, heal this man. Family on 3, 1, 2, 3, family." And I saw my roommate Brandon Jones from freshman year start crying. And then our middle linebacker start crying. And that was one of the times I almost choked up and lost it. I got the frog in my throat. I was like, but then I got it together and I was able to enjoy the moment and rolled off the field.
That's awesome. And what did it mean to the boys? Like, that's huge. Like, to the team, like, that's,
oh man, those are my guys. Those are my guys. It was a special moment. People on my teammates behind me throwing up the 5-2, you know, leaning me out there, everyone coming up to me, slapping me on my shoulder, giving me a hug, all that. It was, oh man, it gives you chills down your spine.
Yeah, and talking about chills, because you just talking about snow and blizzards, and because, yeah, like, you know, down here in Australia, we're the, you know, we're the driest continent on earth. It doesn't, it snows in bits and places, but you just talking about snow makes me feel cold, brother.
Yeah, I have no idea what it's like here in the northeast of New Jersey, man. It's, we get our weather is all types of craziness up here. Cold, cold, rain, hot, sunny, windy, every, we get everything here.
And how do you go with, like, with your internal thermostat and regulating your temperature all right, or?
And I keep my room at 80 degrees. I have a heated fan on. Everyone that comes in my room always dies. Like, it's so hot in here, blah, blah, blah. You know, stripping down to t-shirts and undershirts because it's so hot in here. But
yeah,
I always say I'm like a bear in the wintertime. I hibernate.
Yeah.
Then I come back out in like the spring, summer.
That's awesome. And what, and talking about awesome is the NFL and, mm-hmm, and the drafting situation. Like, and that's why, you know, because I'm a big fan of New Era hats, and I don't know if you can see the symbol.
Tampa Bay.
Yeah, there we are.
I can see it standing in the shape of Florida with the Tampa Bay logo in there.
I see. You don't play, right? Yeah, but yeah. So talk to us about that drafting period, and yeah, and Tampa Bay, and just what that means to you.
Yeah, so Coach Shiano left Rutgers at the end of the 2011 season and took a job with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2012. And that would have been the year that it was my draft class if I never got injured. Mm-hmm. And I remember after the draft is over, you know, they were figuring out their roster spots, and you're allowed 90 men on your roster in the offseason. And they had 89 players, and then with the 90th player, he gives me a call up, and we're just talking about school life in general. And then he goes, well, with our 90th spot, we want you to fulfill that spot. And we want to sign you to our 90-man roster, and you want to be a part of the Tampa Bay organization. We want to bring you down here, get you to meet the, you know, the owners, the coaching staff, the team, and get to be a part of our organization, because we want our players to epitomize what you go through, which, how you fight and live your life each and every day. And let me just tell you, over the 2 years that he was there, I went down there like 10 times, got to see what it was like to be in the NFL, sign a contract, get the swag, you know, it was just an awesome moment. I was so thankful, and I can never be more appreciative for coaching the Glazer family and everyone else a part of that whole idea and situation.
Yeah, see, you're still a baller, brother. Doesn't matter, you know.
Trying, man, I'm trying.
You're modest, come on. No, but, and yeah, well, you look at that organization, and, you know, looking at Mr. Brady jumping on board with him last year and taking that. So is that what's the organization that you grew up following as a kid?
I'm a diehard Denver Broncos fan. Crazy, because I live in New Jersey. Most of the people in New Jersey support New York Giants and the New York Jets. I was watching Terrell Davis. He was a football player, running back. As a kid, I was 8 years old. I said, I like him. I'm going to follow that team. And here I am at 30 years old now, 22 years later, still supporting the Denver Broncos, which is thousands of miles away from my house. But I love the Denver Broncos. And, you know, I always, of course, keep up with the Buccaneers after everything they did for me. And after they just won the Super Bowl this past season, was a pretty cool moment. I said they should send me a Super Bowl ring.
Yes, please. Yeah, and so... So you've been in the media over the years, and like, and where you've been traveling your country, and with a lot of that, like, and going back to the NFL draft, and where I'm talking about adversity and what you've gone through with life and what's important to you and how you're talking to others. So that's opened the door to some NFL teams over the years. Where have you been talking to some of the other teams, and like, whether if it's got to do with NFL, college, and just talking to them about what you've gone through and how maybe that you can pass something off to them before they run out onto the field?
Well, it's, you know, it's interesting because NFL football community, even though we go to battle against each other, we're a very tight-knit community. So a lot of the players and obviously the coaches, they remember my injury and when it happened and being in the media and all of that. So when I go to games sometimes, like when they're, I go to a lot of Giants and Jets games when some of my other friends have their, you know, their teams come in town and you want to see, we go to MetLife Stadium. And, you know, when I see, if I go on the field and you get to see other players and the coaches, they recognize me and they come up to me and they, you know, show their love and, you know, their gratitude and just this and that. So yeah, it's definitely opened the door to relationships with other, you know, players in the NFL. Cause we just, we all get it. We understand the grind and the hustle and they tell me how I've inspired them. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. And mate, pretty cool. You know, it's more than cool. Cause an ESPY award, how'd that come about? That's awesome. You know, it's showing like you don't have to, you're wheeling about doing life, still grinding, hustling, and you still, and these awards and accolades are still coming on. Like, just talk us through this whole period and what you're doing and getting these awards and what it means.
Yeah, this was, you know, fairly still new into my injury because I won the Jimmy V Award for Perseverance at the ESPYs in June of 2012. So this was, you know, almost this nine years ago. And I was still had, you know, still figuring out my journey, but still fighting and, you know, overcoming the adversity and pushing through. And they had reached out to my broadcasting agent and told me that I was up for one of the finalists for the award and they were keeping me updated. And my agent calls me up and said, "Eric, you won the Jimmy V Award for Perseverance." And I think I was on my way to get a haircut at the time. And I was like, "Holy shit." Like, it was crazy. I was celebrating. I'm like, I had planned out flying like 40 people out there. I was like, everybody got to come, the whole town. But obviously, Despies was like, whoa. we'll allow you to have 10. So it was, we filled those 10 spots up and it was just crazy because you go there, you see all these different athletes and celebrities that you see on TV. But when I got there, you know, a lot of them recognized me and they came and said hello. But after my speech, and then when there's an after party afterwards, I was the one that everyone wanted to take a picture with. Insane. And you're having fun with the Gronkowski brothers and just a moment that I'll never forget.
That's awesome, you know. And like at the end of the day, and they're just, and it's like the way that you look at these stars, but they're just people too at the end of the day, hey. So, yeah, so that's huge, you know. And yeah, and what's it, so has it shown other people that not just the NFL, the American football community, but like I'm talking about other people with disabilities in your home state or around the country. So how's it been like being in touch with that community and how's that shown what you can do and uplift some of the other people around you that are going through similar situations?
Yeah, I'm getting, being in this chair now and this injury for now 10 and a half years, I've gotten to see some crazy stories, unfortunate situations, great situations, overcoming stories, and some stories that don't end so well. So it opens your eyes and just gives you a newfound of appreciation on life.
Yeah.
And the things that you can do, the people that you have in your life, and motivates me to do more because I know it's crazy to say so many people, they would like to even be in my situation, being able to share their story all the time, being able to do this, being able to, I'm like, you know what? I'll never take any of this for granted. Because I know somebody that doesn't may not have the same support system as me, but would be just as willing. They don't have that same opportunity. And that's why I'm always going to push and advocate for people that are in a similar situation as me to share light on their stories and bring awareness so one day we can find a cure for this so people can be able to not be in the shadow or not, you know, be afraid to have a disability or, you know, things like that. I want to just bring as much awareness and love and, you know, gratitude and also be able to help them through tough situations and give them guidance. I get calls and emails all the time about someone, unfortunately, someone, you know, but a new spinal cord injury and just trying to talk with their family and trying to get them through those initial stages in the very beginning.
See, that's super important. Like that end note that you said there too, like when it's talking to people, when they first have their injury, because like, as you'd know, just with life and how, you know, life was what it once was. And then that flip of a switch, and then it feels like, you know, the earth has just been taken from under you, and it's just trying to deal with, and it's not just the person that's going through with the disability. It's a whole ripple effect, like their family, their partners, community. So that's awesome to hear that, you know, people are reaching out and you're able to, you know, if it's not just telling your story, but, you know, saying if it's helping anybody in any way, shape or form, because like, as you said, and I've had similar circumstances where it's talking to people with disabilities, or it's a spinal cord injury or other, where they might be in a fortunate situation, but they're not willing to give it a go. And like, some people can end up down that end of the spectrum, in sort of in the middle, or up the other spectrum, like you, and what, where you're pushing for forward, perseverance, you know, keeping the wheels turning. That's what it's all about, brother. Yeah. You know? So, and that's and that's where, and mate, it seems like you're going like 100,000 miles ahead, and it's venture after venture, and we're going into your latest venture, Le Grand Coffee House. Like, so you love coffee that much, eh? And you thought, you just said, yeah, I'm going to just start a brew house, and, you know, and that's bringing in community.
And the crazy part about it is, it was actually the exact opposite. I never even had a cup of coffee until August of 2020. What you just said at the end, everything that's been going on in the world, especially in the United States over the past, you know, year, and the COVID and everything, and the election, it's been a lot of negative stuff. And I say, when people look at me, what do, like, they need to look at me, inspiration, motivation, overcoming obstacles, handling adversity. And I said, what do people love and what do people need? And I'm like, coffee, they need that every single day. So I created my brand, Le Grand Coffee House, to give that people that daily affirmation, that reminder of not letting the negatives creep in. Be a good person, handle your business by overcoming adversity, being able to bring people together. And that's why we created our little slogan, that's bringing unity to the community with a daily cup of belief. You gotta remind people every single morning, or when they need a little picking up in the afternoon. You know, that's what it's all about.
That's awesome. And it's pretty close to home too, is it?
Yeah, but it's 1.7 miles away from my house. So right down the road, you know, not too far away at all. It's right in my hometown of Woodbridge, New Jersey. Yep. I'm excited about it. I can't wait to get my foundation involved more. The Christopher and Dana Reed Foundation, and hopefully being able to help people with disabilities who might have want to be a future barista, you know, bring them on out. And we'll try making sure that our place is fully handicap accessible and people can have full access to it. So I'm excited to see what we do at Le Grand Coffee House, and as well as integrating Team Le Grand and the Christopher Dana Reed Foundation, because we actually have one of our events coming up, a Walk to Believe, which is our annual 5K that we do. And, you know, to raise funds for spinal cord injury research. And since we're doing it virtually, we want people all around the world to do it. Like, we had 10 countries do it last year. I don't know if Australia was in it. They might have been. So if not, we got to get someone from Australia to participate this year for our Walk to Believe. It's going to be on June 12th. But yeah, we're for like the highest fundraisers and the highest team. Like, we're going to give them some free coffee, you know, stuff like that. So that's how I can't wait to keep on tying, you know, the coffee house and tying into our foundations.
That makes total sense. And mate, hopefully this coffee house, that's the first of many, you know. Get the franchise out, brother.
You know, I'm trying, and it's gonna be that first one is gonna be the one that, you know, skyrockets the rest of the business.
That's it. And also with your coffee, you know, it'd be good when that gets rolling on. And if you want to start shipping that stuff overseas, mate, I'll be grabbing a packet for sure, you know.
Hey, and once we really get it, we got our online store going now. We've been up and running for about 4 months, and we sold to all 50 states. And now, so as we keep on evolving, don't worry, we're gonna start making it internationally, so we can get you some coffee all the way out there.
I see.
Australia. Crikey, mate. Gotta get you some of that coffee, mate.
Say you got an accent down pack, brother.
A little bit.
Yeah, so, mate, I really appreciate your time. And the thing is, before we wrap it up, I want to just talk about Walk to Believe. So you're at this point now, you've got the coffee house, you've got accolades behind you, you've got a great platform. And for quadriplegics over in the States, but not just over there, I'm talking to you now, I'm in Australia. You know, there's people all over the world that watching what you're doing and that are inspired, including myself. So, and just so talk to us about Walk to Believe, mate.
I appreciate that. Like I said, a Walk to Believe is our annual 5K. This will be our 11th annual this year. And it was all started from a woman who doesn't even like American football. Didn't know anything about it, but she felt for my brother, and she has two sons. And she just came up to visit me when I was in my inpatient rehab at Kessler Institute here in West Orange, New Jersey. And she said, I want to do something. A lot of people want to do something. They say that. But she followed through with this. She partnered up with Rutgers, the university, and they started a 5K. She said, maybe, you know, we'll do it 1 year. We'll raise a bunch of money, and that'll help. But people had such a great time. And we started to build a community with it. And we started to get more people with spinal cord injuries out there and started bringing people together. And it comes around like an all around, it's like a little festival. We have our sponsors out there with their tables and stuff represented. We have the basketball games going on. There's the 5K, there's the run, world walk part of it that everyone's participating. It becomes a family event. And we just had so much fun with it that we're here with our 11th annual one. And like I said, last year, due to COVID, we had to do it virtually, which we're doing again. It was our best year. We raised $190,000, had all 50 states, two U.S. territories participate, and 10 countries. So now we got to do it even bigger this year. We got to get people from all over the world because, like I said, well, you just mentioned before, it's not just about the spinal cord injuries here in America. It's all over the world. But we got to find a cure for everybody, not just here in the United States.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I'm going to make sure that, and if that's okay with you, with the podcast, I'm going to add a link to where we can find where the virtual event is, because that's really important, you know, because it's just having that belief. And if we can get more people, doesn't matter if it's in the States or wherever it is, and that's awesome, having the virtual platform so that
you can be anywhere. You can be anywhere in the world, and wherever you are, if you want to do it in your neighborhood, you want to go to your local track, whatever you want to do, but make sure you do your 5K that day, take a picture or video, and you just upload it to Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and she'll let us know that, hey, I participated in a Walk to Believe today.
Awesome, brother. Well, before we wrap it up, let's look at, do you want to throw some of your, how do people contact you? Like if it's got to do with your social media, emails, or whatever it may be, what's the best way to people to know what Eric LeGrand's about, Coffee House, or to do Walk to Believe? Talk us through it.
It's definitely social media and my website's like at Eric LeGrand 52. So ERICLEGRAND 52. That's my Twitter. That's my Instagram. My Facebook is just Eric LeGrand. And then our foundation is Team LeGrand. So TEAMLEGRAND. You can go to our website, our Instagram, with all our information on our events, a Walk to Believe, and everything that we're going to be doing going forward. And yeah, just get a part of it. If you're in the States, get you some of that LeGrand Coffee House. But don't worry, when we start shipping international, I hope to have a big presence of LeGrand Coffee House out there in Australia.
Hey, I'll be one of the first, that's for sure.
I appreciate that, my brother.
All right. Thanks, brother. Really appreciate your time. And mate, hopefully we're talking soon. And, you know, I'll be getting some beans out here over down under and, you know, be having a hot brew and then coming up to June, and then we'll be looking at your foundation there and what it represents, and then get that virtual event across the world. Thanks, mate.
Absolutely, my man. I appreciate you having me on. You take care of yourself.
Over and out, brother.
All right.
See, this bloke, he don't slow down. This brew house, coffee house, that'll be the first of many, I reckon. And hopefully these beans start shipping to the southern hemisphere. I want to get me hands on some. Love coffee. You hear that, Eric? Doing good work. Keep it up. And if you like the podcast, hit that subscribe button. Be much appreciated. And we've also got a Patreon page. So if you want to help further support the channel and become a part of the squad, hit the link. That'd be great. And if you want to get in contact with me, you can get me via Instagram at StreetRollingCheetah or email one word, StreetRollingCheetah@gmail.com. And we've also got a Facebook page, Keep Rolling with Jake Briggs, so check it out. I want to thank our sponsors, Permanbil Australia, greatest electrical chairs in the land. Wouldn't be sitting in anything else but these four walls right here, and they've got great assistive tech also. So righto, see you on the next one.